Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, sex nerd. Sex nerd Zandra here. Really good to be back. See, I was telling the truth last week. I am releasing these episodes weekly again. Yay! And I've buddied up with my bud, Aristotle, of the Nerdist empire, so that we can get this stuff out on time to you on hump day every week. Aristotle, give me a whoop whoop! Yeah, did you hear that? He's shy and sweet, and so I'm trying to get him to make more noise. Because he drums. I just learned that. He's a drummer. The quietest, shyest little hardcore drummer. What's going on? I'm excited to bring you this episode. I had a great time cramming a bunch of sex educator / social justice / racial justice educator people, passionate folks that I'd never met before. From a conference a long time ago. I packed them all in a room and was like, let's talk about the things, because I don't know a lot about how sexuality and racial identity, people call me a person of color, like, yo, you get it because you're a person of color. I'm like, oh, am I? I'm just me. And sure, I am just me and you're just you. And also, there are things to consider about how education and medicine and marriage and like all sorts of different institutions and how those relate to sexuality. And so I got schooled hardcore on a bed at a conference. So that's happening in your ear holes in just a minute. Beforehand, I just want to let you know that I am all up in teaching online's business. You probably remember me saying this last week. Sexnerdsandra.com, all the links. Dude, I'm about to talk about female pleasure so much in the next 24 hours, because I'm teaching it three times, every class three times. I feel like I'm Rocky and I'm about to go into a hardcore montage of working out, but instead I'm talking about genitals. And part of that is practicing how to draw genitals, because that is something I'm not very good at. That's why I have vulva puppets. Anyway, if you like to learn about sex, hey, tune in. $10 every Wednesday, female pleasure. Next week's Balls Deep. My fundamentals of fellatio class, intermediate BJs the next week. Look, I love steak and a blowjob day. I just like the idea of it. It brings me joy in my heart. So I'll be teaching a lot about BJs the next couple weeks, and then a kink class on March 23rd, cunnilingus March 30th, all the orgasms all the time on April 6th, strap-ons April 13th, copulation, boning, more boning, and booty basics. Basically, I am packaging together all of the classes I teach. In my brain, I call it hump night because it's Wednesday night all over the world. And it's like season one. I'm just going to shove them all together in the next 3 months. So join me. It'll be really fun. And yeah, so that's what's going on. And if you are in LA, I will be on stage at Meltdown on the Nerd Melt stage with Dr. Timmery Schmidt and Daryl Charles of DTF, which is a podcast from Philly. They're in town being badass here, so I'm really honored to be on the stage with them. That's what's going on with me. And I feel like that's enough, because I want to let you get to this episode. Aristotle, how are we doing? 3:30? Oh, yeah, I got it under 5 minutes. Woo! This was the second time we recorded this, because I talk a lot. But I really like you. And I'm so glad to be talking to you right now. So I'm not going to get mushy, but I will say that I appreciate you. I hope you know that. All right, let's get to the sex nerdery. Ah, go team fun!
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Oh snap. Okay. This is going to be fun. I don't even know what's about to happen. Oh my goodness. Who knows?
A range of tools for working more effectively toward racial justice. Oh, lofty, lofty, exciting. Hi, everyone.
Hey.
And this can kind of pick up on like ambient noise. Oh. So you can be like, hey. Okay. So I've got, let me try it. Ida Mendule.
Got it.
I've got Anaïn Bjorkqvist.
Hello.
Hi. And Cindy Lee Alves.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're on.
I'm really trying to be better with names lately. Hi, everyone.
Hey.
Okay, so we're here in a hotel together. Feels like we're about to orchestrate a threesome the way we're all in, foursome. We're all
in
the bed.
That's not what we were here for?
Oh. I was going to podcast first.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. We can do that.
And then negotiations.
Okay, so I really want to talk to you three because I don't understand how to be better about this, but you put together a panel and a workshop, and like it was like a 4-hour, 3-hour event a few days ago on racial justice in sex ed. And I'm a sex educator, and I feel like I could probably be better and more aware and more thoughtful and more just, I guess, would be best, around this in my work. And also people listening who are just dating and being people in the world feel like there's a lot of stuff that we're not aware of that's maybe even easy to do in your daily lives to make the world a more just and sexy place. So that's what I have forced you all to be in here to talk to me about. How are you feeling?
There's enthusiastic consent in the room.
Yeah.
That's a consensus.
Yes.
Yeah. Cindy Lee, you feeling good?
I'm feeling pretty magical today. Yes.
Yeah. Consenting? Yes. Consentingly Absolutely. Magical? Okay. Now, I know that WOCSHN, Women of Color Sexual
Health
Network.
We got two.
I think I submitted to it. I was like, am I colorful enough? I don't know. Ida, did you start it?
No, I did not. I very much did not. So credit goes where credit is due. Marietta Gary Smith, Bianca Laureano, and Trina Scott started WOCSHN years ago. I think almost a decade ago at this point.
Oh, really?
And they were the founders of the organization.
So this is, I mean, I think of it as a directory to find more diverse sex educators. Is that what it is?
That's a part. That's a single slice of what we do. That's one of the biggest things. But really the way it started was the folks who started WOCSHN wanted to be able to build community. Mm-hmm. So not even start a directory, but start a community and a membership organization where other women of color could find each other to help them work on these issues and not feel alone, really. That's the biggest thing, because it started from a conference, a sex education and therapy conference, where it was a sea of white faces and a few people of color. And they were like, this is stupid. This is not acceptable.
And Ayane, has it changed much since?
I am actually the newest member on the board. I'm the newest member on the board. So for me, when I was watching the work they were doing, it meant a lot to me because here were faces that looked like mine that were not only making room for me and making sure that they told me about when there would be opportunities, but they also gave me the strength and courage to speak up when those opportunities weren't being given to us. So yeah, it's changed a lot and it's helped a lot of people find their place in the field of sexuality.
And what do you do in the world of sex? We should probably establish basics. Like, what do you do out there? What are you doing?
I am a sex coach. So I'm a relationship and sex coach is what I do.
Located where?
Oh, I'm in the Bay Area, but I do most of my stuff through Skype coaching. So.
Oh, cool. What's your website?
It's sexlovejoy.com.
Got it. Cindy Lee, how about you?
What am I doing in the world? Besides shimmying often, because that's that's my thing. Most of the work that I've done is adjunct work. So I did a lot of teaching human sexuality classes, mostly in like Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York. I did a lot of, you know, workshops here and there, private consultant work. But right now my focus is my dissertation. So I am at Widener University and I'm working on my PhD in sexuality studies.
Nice. How about you, Ida?
At its core, I'm an activist. So whether it's when I'm doing sex education, social work, public health, nonprofit management, because those are the fields that I work in, it's always activism, like at its core. And I'm getting more into doing a lot of writing. So a lot of writing has been very personal in nature, and now I'm trying to get it more out there because I see that there's a need, especially when it's about how do we promote racial justice and what actually can we do. A lot of people have that 101 or are maybe okay with getting that 101 and just don't know how to move past that.
What's your website?
My website is www.aidamandule.com.
What was it?
It's basically my name, idamandule.com.
It's like, I demand a lay.
Exactly. If you squish it, it's right. I demand a lay. I sometimes tell that to professors, and it gets mixed results. They're like, oh, that's funny.
Cindy Lee, do you have a website or a place people can find you?
I don't have a website, but you can find me on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
It's the T-H-E-E underscore Cindy underscore Lee. So the Cindy Lee and on Twitter and Instagram. And then I have a Facebook-like page. It's Cindy Lee Alves.
Sweet. Wait, come back. You.
Me.
Tell me everything. What is racial justice and why do we need it in sexuality?
The nice way to say it.
So you don't have to say it nice. We can get real. We can get real, real. I mean, like, I feel like I was racist just saying all your names real sexy. Was I offensive?
I thought it was sexy.
They were, yeah. Okay, they're like, we were consenting. They were into it. Yeah. Okay, cool.
That's so, the difference.
Like you mentioned before, like, has it changed any? And I want to say no, but we're putting some work in, right? So right now, there are people who are adamant on being allies, and we're like, great, we appreciate it. We want that support. Show us better than you can tell us, kind of thing. So. The fact that there are still people that are like, what does race have to do with sexuality is like a key factor of why racial justice needs to exist.
What does race have to do with sexuality?
Race has to do with everything.
Steal the mic. If you phone a friend. Oh, wait. Well, he wants it.
Well, for me, like, the way that I fell into sexuality was my marriage was bad. So my husband and I started to say, oh, we want to explore swinging. And here I am, Afro-Cubana, and I get into swinging, and all the black men are like BBC, like big black cock, and they're like token items in the mm-hmm. swinging world. And that put me in my feels. Like, you know, I didn't want the men that I considered, you know, these are black men, these are my people, to be objectified. So it has a lot to do with sex, even how you experience as a Latina. I'm hypersexualized. So there's a long history, and I think Ida, you know, and Cindy can definitely, as the academics here, can say, you know, can break it down. But, you know, as someone who's out there living it, there's, you know, there's a lot of pieces that when you step into the kink world or you step into the swinging world, mm-hmm. how you're treated, race has a lot to do with it.
Okay. Sub question to what you just said. Very interesting. So being half Filipino, half Irish with Native American, and, you know, who knows, the genetic tests are in the mail as we speak, find out what the hell's going on in here. But like there's, and I try to make the differences. Some people are like, oh, you're lucky because people are like all about boning Asian people. Woo! You know, and there's the like, okay, fine. You think you're kind of fetishizing the Asian part of me, like whatever, but don't assume that who I am inside is the subservient, quiet, like two-dimensional person. So there's, to me, like those are two aspects. Like, sure, you can think I'm hot because of what I look like, but I get to know me as a person, you know. That's how I think of it, but I don't know if that's dumbing it down too much. There's more to it.
There's more to it. And I mean, what you said is this idea of you can be attracted to me based on what I look like, but don't make these assumptions and then act on them. Mm-hmm. We're all going to make judgments. We live in a society that has a lot of stereotypes, and we're going to have those embedded in our heads. I'm not saying we have to delete everything that's in our brains, but what do you do then with that? And if we have people judging others based on their skin color, their racial features, whatever, what do they do with that information? And really, we're talking about objectification, kind of what you're saying, this fetishizing, this objectifying, and it's the assumptions that people make based on what they think you are or what they think you're going to be like based on those features.
Okay. Interesting.
And the other thing is, you know, a person of color speaks and they're eloquent. And then it's like,
oh my God, you speak so well.
Yes. So those are things, especially people who have done so much work, like the two women sitting next to me who have done a lot of work to get degrees. You know, when they speak, of course, they've been in school. So those are the things that when people say things to the microaggressions, it has a lot to do with how we see them. And as a person of color, it gets embedded to how you act and how mm-hmm. you feel about yourself.
And what are some microaggressions in terms of sex life? I mean, I know hypersexualization, like assuming that African-American or Latino women are like more sexual than white women necessarily. But then there's that whole like, oh, white women be crazy in bed. I don't know. We know nobody wins and everybody wins. I don't know who's winning.
You were talking a little bit earlier about being mixed. Uh-huh. A microaggression that a lot of mixed people get is, oh, it's so great to be mixed. You get the best of both worlds. Yes. Because being individually, and usually it's being mixed with white. Because it's mm-hmm. usually not, oh, you're half black and half Asian. It's usually you're half Asian and white, half black and white, half Latina and white. Mm-hmm. And it's this idea of it's better to be mixed, or you're hotter for some reason. Microaggressions are on, you're so pretty for a black girl. You're so pretty for an mm-hmm. Asian girl. Exotic. You're exotic. You're so tasty and fiery and spicy. And all these ideas, again, it boils down to assumptions about what sex will be like with you. Yeah. Or what does your culture, you know, automatically make you do in bed and things like that. And we're boiling it down to the sexualization piece, but we're not even getting started on what that means when you're working, when you're in an academy, or when you're speaking in front of a public. That's, you know, we're talking kind of more about the dating piece. Mm-hmm. And to go back real quick to what you asked, what is racial justice? What is racial equity? And for us, racial justice is a process of systems and policies and work that gets put in to achieve a state of racial equity. And racial equity is a place and sort of this state where a person's race or ethnicity does not dictate the opportunities that they have, and it does not dictate the kind of struggles that they will face, and where people have what they need to survive and thrive. And it's not just, oh, you're my token black friend or my token Asian friend. You have more to you, and those differences are not erased in the process. Mm-hmm.
Piggybacking off of what Ida said about you're mixed and it's great, and my kids are mixed. I'm Afro-Cubana, I'll say that again, and my husband is Finnish. So my kids are half white, and I always get, in like 50 years, everyone's going to be mixed and everyone's going to be beautiful. Guess what? Black women and black people are beautiful and Asians are beautiful. We don't want everyone to look mixed. We you know, like Grace Jones is beautiful. I want to see black bodies. I want to see different color bodies. And that's what, to me, those are microaggressions when you tell me as a parent, you know,
all your children are more beautiful than you are.
Or that, you know, that invalidates people like Grace Jones, that as a child, I was like, oh my God, she's so beautiful. Mm. So yeah, it invalidates that. And even when people say all lives matter, that invalidates that black lives matter. It really does.
Okay, so if I actually find someone who happens to be a mixed race attractive, do I just never say anything about their face?
Well, I think that's the key point too. Like, I was going to touch on the fact that, yes, we're talking about these things that have to do with it, but we can't ignore these differences either. We don't want anybody to be like, oh, I don't see color, or that's not, it's the preconceived notions that we tie to someone's race, or mm-hmm. to the fact that they are of this ethnicity or this racial or ethnic nationality identity. And there was an article that just came out, like, when race is a factor in your attractions, mm-hmm. if you're like, I don't date black people or I don't date these folks because of that, that's a problem. And mm-hmm. the problem is we're not seeing that as an issue. We're seeing that as, oh, that's just a field of eligible. And we're not talking about the embedded, like, systemic white supremacy, racial superiority that exists regardless of what the person looks like. Because, you know, white supremacy is among people of color too. It's not like we're like, oh, let's get whitey. That's not the issue. But at the same time, we want a redistribution of power too.
You mean like lighter skinned people in any ethnic group tend to be like prized as more valuable or
absolutely.
Whatnot? Is that what you're talking
absolutely.
About?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I would love to say something about that. So I am a very, very pale Latina. I was raised in Puerto Rico, and the racial politics in Puerto Rico are tied to, but not the exact same as those in the United States. We're a territory, we're a colony of the United States, so it affects us. And back there, I was whitey. Like, I was the dominant culture. My skin color was prized. The fact that I had straight hair and, you know, like, pale skin, it was the best thing ever to be that in that culture. And so even in spaces of just people of color, we have to be aware of the differences and this idea of colorism, that shades that are lighter are better. And again, that doesn't mean that we have to forget the impact that white people have on us and the fact that white society as a whole has problems with race, but we can't just look externally. We have to look internally too, because as Cindy Lee very eloquently put yesterday, I loved this phrase, white supremacy can be dipped in all kinds of chocolate. Like, white supremacy is something that we are all taught from a very early age, even if we don't realize it. And we have to deconstruct it in ourselves. We have to look inside and see what are the things that we're doing to perpetuate it, regardless of our skin color. But that said, the people who have a particular skin color will have certain advantages.
Okay. I mean, we've talked a little bit on the show about privilege. And, like, I imagine, like, what really helped me is, like, around, especially, like, male, white privilege. They're just constantly walking around with an invisible lab coat on. Like, they're just always thought of as authority. Like, it's a default perception. And it's just to be aware of that, not to say, like, they're bad people or whatever. And I do just want to, because I do have a lot of white listeners, is if someone's Caucasian or white or Irish or whatever, and they're, like, maybe having some feelings about this conversation, like, especially with the term white supremacy, which is, I'm kind of inferring, like, I think you mean, like, just the idea that white is supreme, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a subconscious training that we've gotten. Should white people feel bad listening to this and be like, I don't see color, everybody's beautiful, stop saying that?
White guilt is not what we're after. Mm-hmm. But if guilt makes you take action that is anti-racist, I'll take it. I'll take that guilt. But what we really want is for... I'm just being straight up. Really what we want white people to think about is how does their race and ethnicity impact their life? And how can you look at other people who are different from you and see the struggles that they face that you do not by virtue of your race? We don't want people to feel necessarily bad, but Autumn, you know, there will be a feeling of discomfort. If you are white and you are realizing that not everything you got in life was just because you worked hard, that there are historical, you know, if you look back in history, I think history is fascinating. If you look back at how the United States was colonized and how land ownership laws developed, you can trace a pretty clear line to who owns houses today. Mm-hmm. There's a really great documentary, Race, The Power of an Illusion by PBS, that talks about how race and class got intertwined in the United States. I recommend that everyone watch it.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember reading something about that.
So if we have white listeners, and you do, like, if you're feeling uncomfortable, that's the first step. And beyond that discomfort is learning and humility. And that's where we really want to get people to.
And the other thing I think for a lot of white people, and being married to a white man that grew up poor, he was living at an intersection where he didn't feel like he had mm-hmm. privilege. He grew up poor. So when he heard the term white privilege for the first time, he was like, what are you talking about? So the white people who are living at certain intersections, if they're queer or if they're, you know, trans, or like, it's hard to understand that. But that's something that you have to see, how much privilege do you have? Because I have privilege. I have heterosexual privilege. I have, you know, good hair privilege. There's a bunch of stuff like everybody. There's always privilege. So you have to not only think of, like, how are you taking up space and how can you share that space?
Yeah, I think sharing the space is, and like when you see, like, you're a part of some sort of community building event and it's all one ethnic group, like, get some diversity in there, get different voices, for sure. Let's take it back to sex. This is important stuff to think about. It's, you know, when you say, like, I had to take action, like, what is somebody who's like, I just am trying to figure out this intensely conservative upbringing I had. I'm listening to a podcast and I'm just graduated college. I'm trying to figure out what to do in the world. And, like, I don't know what's going on. How does this even inform how I live my life? What can I do? Everybody's kind of looking at the mic right now. I just, like, give me
that. I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. One thing that I feel is really powerful is storytelling and listening to other people's stories. Mm-hmm. Because if you haven't experienced something and you're wondering, how does race play into sexuality? Looking at podcasts of people that talk about that, looking at books that talk about that, on WOCSN's website, www.wocsn.com. I always mess it up.
WOCSHN.
I was so close. SHN. I just always flip the last two. .org.
I'll put the link on the Nerdist.
Beautiful. Post. Excellent. So if you listen to the people that are talking about this, and specifically talking about it through an anti-racist lens, because not all stories of people of color are going to be the same, and not everyone has had that sort of awakening about racial justice. Mm-hmm. You know, if you'd talked to me when I was 15, I would have been like, all lives matter, and I don't know, people are racist to themselves, and I don't believe that anymore. And it's because I had to learn my history, and I had to learn people's stories that weren't necessarily the same as mine as a sort of white passing Latina. So first step, listen to other people when they talk about how this matters to them. And if they're calling you out, or if they're saying, I'm uncomfortable, or I'm uncomfortable with the ways that you're talking about my race or my, you know, skin color, whatever, listen. And that discomfort that's going to be produced in you because you feel like maybe you're being judged or maybe you're being a jerk and now it's weird, move past that, hold that, and talk to other white people, specifically anti-racist white people, about how that makes you feel, so that you don't have to put those feelings on the person that's trying to talk to you about the damage that you've done to them or things like that.
Oh. At the training that we did here at Catalyst Con, one of the things that's important is to know your own history, because sometimes people assume that the stuff that happened was long ago. And, you know, as the newest member, when I did the racial justice workshop the first time, for me, I was like, wow, I'm a person of color, and I didn't know that some of this stuff was happening like 40 years ago, or that something happened 5 years ago. So it's learn your own history and find the people that, like what Ida said, you know, find the books, find the resources so you can learn your history. And if you're attracted to somebody who is mixed or who is black or who is this, learn their history. Don't tokenize somebody, you know, appreciate them and learn their histories too.
Get some context.
Yeah.
I got some nods. Cindy Lee is just looking up the ceiling, like dreaming about a big thought.
I'm trying to go back, and maybe this is me. Like, what were you trying to ask about sexuality specifically? Because we keep going back to racial justice, and we know how it's intersectional. But were you asking, like, how they tie together? Or?
Yeah. How does racial justice and sexuality, I mean, is it a matter of making sure that everybody gets dates at the end of the day? Like, is it...
That can be one reason why. Perhaps, but that can be a factor in someone's sexual identity and their sexual being, and bringing it back to that. There are people, you know, there are certain people who are fetishized and sexualized. So then in turn, they feel shame or guilt when they do want to be sexual and they do want to feel pleasure. So how do we navigate that and try to, again, provide some context? Like, yes, these stereotypes exist. Yes. We want people not to believe that everyone is going to fit these stereotypes. But it's okay to also think about sex positivity and pleasure. And you can be a sexy, spicy Latina if that's who you want to be. It's mm-hmm. tying that to everyone and saying everyone is going to be Sofia Vergara, right? So it's that piece. It's not taking away from those who are sexy Latinas or sexy black women and not taking away from the history of being eroticized. It's kind of finding that, going back to intersectionality, and that exists.
And very clear markers of these racial justice issues in sexuality. When you try to find sexy lingerie that's nude color, what colors are available?
Oh, right, right, yeah.
When you try, yeah, it's not brown, it's usually super beige. If you're trying to find sex toys that maybe match your skin color, if you want to buy a dildo or a packer to, you know, affirm your gender identity or play with gender, what colors are available? What are the names for those colors?
Right,
there
yes.
are some companies out there that have like the toy that's like the pregnant Latina.
Right.
Like pussy stroker, and you know there's
Mandingo.
There's the Mandingo dick and all these different toys that
I don't even know what Mandingo is.
that use slurs for their product names. So when looking at that, just even in the products that are available, that's a big thing. Also, if you're dating someone, and if you're dating interracially, are they comfortable showing you who you are to their family? Mm. That's a big thing. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about kids, and if you're in a mixed race couple, what are those kids going to look like? Is that going to be a factor in how you raise them? The lesbian couple that there was this article about them a few months ago, they were suing a sperm bank because their donation sperm got mixed up and they got a black person's sperm. So they were going to have a baby that didn't look like them necessarily. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in these ways, and if you're dating someone and you're in love with them and it's going really well and they start saying things that are racist mm-hmm. and you're uncomfortable, but you love them, mm-hmm. how do you address that with them? Because, you know, all this stuff won't necessarily come out on a first date. it may come out after after a while, and you're like, oh, secret racist. Okay,
well, I'm just joking, but I love you. And dealing with that. And like,
oh, like when someone's kind of being like jokingly racist at you. Okay, like I had a partner several years ago who loved, like, he was just like, you're yellow golden skin. And like, I really didn't care. You're all like me, like, what? I actually didn't care. I thought it was cute because I just really, I mean, I have plenty of privilege. So I'm kind of like, whatever. Like, you're hot too. You Sicilians dying. Rah, rah, you know. But it is like if you... do if you are comfortable playfully embodying that stereotype, that whatever it is that you are ethnically, like, is that bad? Was I secretly doing damage to myself? Was it okay that I was like, whatever, like, I feel like I'm understood as a person, so you can just objectify me, I don't care, you know? Did I hurt myself? Cindy Lee, I love how thoughtful Cindy Lee is,
because the answer I want to give you is, did you think you were objectifying yourself? Because I can't pose my viewpoints on you. Like, I can't tell you how to feel. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people who are into, like, race play and BDSM. Mm-hmm. That's a boundary for me. But if you're into that, it's, you know, how am I going to invalidate you and how you experience pleasure and play with, you know, your own identity? So it's like... did you feel that way?
No, it was great.
But, right, you know, but like, if but then there are people that are like, that give me like a visceral reaction. Am I wrong for that? Mm-hmm. And like finding out that like, no, these are some of the reasons why you know your feelings are valid and how to deal with that, and mm-hmm. that these things exist and you're not alone in that space and there's support there.
Absolutely. Okay. Either way, your feelings are valid. There should be space for them.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it is looking at the actions in a context. It's not usually just one comment. It's a lot of things. And sometimes people think that, oh, you know, I date a lot of different races. People of color aren't like Pokemon. Just because, you know, you don't gotta catch them all. And just because you're having sex with someone of a different race doesn't mean you're actually respectful of their race mm-hmm. and their identification. Sometimes partners are very respectful of you as their partner, but they'll say weird stuff about your family and about their customs and about their food. And again, it's okay to mess up, because we'll all do it. We'll all mess up at some point. The thing that I love to say is, how you act after you mess up is what dictates, you know, the kind of person you are and if I'm going to trust you again. And a big thing that I also want people to keep in mind is, we're not all in the same place of learning about race and racism. Mm-hmm. Again, if you'd asked me 5 years ago what I felt about race and sex and race and dating, it would have been very different. And the big thing that has changed for me is learning about the history of racism in the United States and learning about the present day implications of that racism. Like Anaïn was saying, we do this activity that from the Western States Center. They have a gallery walk of historical events in reproductive justice, reproductive health that tie to race, and looking at all the different ways that, you know, Puerto Rican women were used as test subjects for the pill, for the birth control pill, without consent. Poor, uneducated women in Puerto Rico that didn't actually know what they were being told to do. They were used as test subjects. The Tuskegee syphilis study was, you know, black folks in the South being used as test subjects to see how syphilis would develop. And they were not being given penicillin, which was the available treatment at the time. And that study went on for years. Like, a lot of medical knowledge that we have right now has been on the backs of people of color without consent, without proper protocol or anything like that. And I didn't know that when I was 12. No. I know it now. Mm-hmm. And so...
and it wasn't 400 years ago. When you say racism, people want to say, oh, slavery was like so long ago. So yeah.
Like, some of these things are happening now. Mm-hmm. The Tuskegee syphilis study only stopped, I think, in like the 70s or something like that, because the media got wind of it. And they were like, this is messed up. And that's why they stopped the study. So for me, and I think for a lot of, you know, folks that we know in Waukshin, it's been learning about where white supremacy has affected our communities and how it still does, that's changed our minds about racism. You know, because I feel like a lot of people think, oh, it's not that bad, or it was a long time ago, or especially if they're upper class people of color, they're like, oh, I made it. Like, I made it by my bootstraps. We have a black president, we're set. And the problem is that, you know, just because one person made it doesn't mean that the opportunities that are available to everyone else, and that this stuff doesn't still keep happening. And it's insidious little things. People think white supremacy is Klansmen and rallies and lynchings, and those still happen. those still happen. But really what you'll see is people getting passed for a job because their name sounds Hispanic.
Right.
Yeah. And things, you know, smaller things that ultimately, you know, and Aine was talking about it, microaggressions. There are studies out there right now that talk about the mental health impact of microaggressions and how it seems like it's a small thing, like all these little small cuts, but ultimately the impact is really, really large and people don't notice that.
To me, microaggression is like when someone tells me like, oh, mixed is so beautiful, that whole thing is they're also telling me in a tiny way that like other people are not beautiful. And like,
if you were full Asian, you wouldn't be as beautiful. Yeah, that's what that like statement says.
And for me, like all everything that we're talking about, how you were talking about, you know, your partner that was saying certain things, like how does racism and how we're being brought up, because a lot of our own parents, or at least my parents, had a lot of internalized self-hate because they, you know, they were of a certain color or a certain hair texture. So how does race play in my own self-worth? How do I step into the world because of all the things that happened to me from, you know, growing up, little girl to now, of how I'm seen? And that has a huge effect in how much power people even feel like they have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like that's the biggest thing for me, is how does it affect my self-worth when I love myself, but when people are telling me, you know, black isn't beautiful, or when I see Black Lives Matter and then 20 people are saying All Lives Matter, it invalidates my feelings. It invalidates how proud I am of my own history. Mm-hmm.
So how was swinging after a while? I mean, there's a lot of white people in swinging.
My husband didn't like it, and you know, we got out of it. But it was very interesting, and the main reason why we got out of it was one of my very close friends was, you know, very objectified, and I couldn't handle it. But I'm very glad that I went down that rabbit hole because it led me here. So,
and here we are. Okay. Websites, where can people find you in the world? I know that I totally went over time. Let's get you out of this hotel room. So, again.
Well, me personally, again, THEE_Cindy_Lee, like the Cindy Lee, because there's only one of me, right? My dad likes Bruce Lee. Shout out to him. Wokshn, though, yes. WOCSHN.org. We also have a Facebook page, a general one, so anyone who wants to support, they can go on there. We also have a private one that's for only women of color, just to have that space of support. That's also on Facebook. We have a Tumblr with Wokshn. We have Twitter. We have a lot now. Periscope. We're trying to get Periscope percolating here.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
It's interesting. I got to keep up with the social media. I don't know.
Yeah, on the Wokshn Twitter, you can find part of the workshop that we did. Oh. So there is a Periscope video, and we'll make sure that that's on the Wokshn website. So yeah, the Wokshn website, and I'm sexlovejoy.com.
Awesome.
It's upsettingly easy to find me online. So if you have my name, you can just Google and you will find everything. Twitter is also a great place to reach me, and I am Neuron Bomb on Twitter.
Ooh. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I learned things.
Thank you
for having me. All right. Go Team Fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.